Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Face it, we're the bad guys. Everybody hates us. Nobody loves us. Bring it on.
What's Russell Wilson doing here?
Nice. Welcome into the playbook for Tuesday on Patriots.com radio. I had to share really a meme on the internet, and I don't usually do that a lot because some of them are just, well, they're not very funny and they're stupid, and some of them are gross and some of them are inane. But I shared one today that I saw on Facebook, and you can
Star
go to
Wars
my Facebook.
Related.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
Shared it on my Facebook page, so you got to be a friend if you want to see it. But it's a shot of Coach Belichick in his blue hoodie. And he does look like the Emperor on Star Wars. He looks like the Emperor, doesn't
so
he? With that dour
so
look on his face. And the meme says, good, let the hate flow through you. That absolutely
That's
is
awesome.
What the whole internet meme thing was built for. Things like that.
That's funny.
That's clever. It's funny.
Yep.
And guess what? It's true. It's true. Let the hate
He's the
flow
emperor?
Through you.
Oh.
He is the emperor. He's the emperor of Patriot Nation, at the very least. Some would think he's the emperor of the NFL because there are those, Eric, as I'm sure you're well aware, there are those that believe that, you know, the Patriots get away with just about everything in the NFL. Outside of New England, they think this.
Well, he should turn into Obi-Wan Kenobi now so that he can perform a Jedi mind trick. Those aren't the deflated footballs we used in the game. Wave your hand in front of
this whole issue of deflated footballs is a Jedi mind trick.
I actually thought it was a joke at first because I was home yesterday working on film study, and I had my Twitter tweet deck open, mm-hmm. and I leave it off to the side of the screen so I can do both. I can watch the film and keep track of what's going on in the news world.
Sure.
And I see a tweet from SportsCenter come out on my timeline, and it said, you know, Patriots being investigated for deflating footballs, could lose draft pick or something. And I read that, and I was like, wow, Sports. And then all of a sudden it disappeared. It was deleted by, you know, Sports, whoever runs SportsCenter's account deleted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, clearly it's one of, like, those Onion stories, and they realized it after they tweeted it out, and they had to get rid of it.
But they didn't.
And didn't think anything of it for the rest of the day, went about my business. And then later in the day I got a call. Somebody calls me and says, hey, what's going on with this deflated football thing? I'm like, wait a minute. You mean that's actually
a story? Yeah.
I couldn't just – it sounds a lot to me like sour grapes.
Well, you know, and you and I –
2 weeks in a row, by the way.
Yeah, we were just talking about this before we started the program here. And let's do this. First of all, let's backtrack just a little bit and let those of you who are listening and want to get your 2 cents worth in on this, because I know there are probably many of you that want to do this. 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free telephone number. 855-PATS-500. 728-7500. That's the number. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address. You can hit me up on Twitter @JRBroadcaster. The hunt for 3K is definitely on now.
You can do it.
I think I can. I might be able to do it in 2 weeks.
3K by the Super Bowl.
I might be able to do it. So spread the word. We got to do that. Yeah, I've got to get into the 21st century properly.
And you need about 150 or so.
Yeah, I'm about 150 or so away. So we got to do that. And then John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the spelling of the last name on Facebook. And as I will tell you, as I do at least once a week, every week, it's my own personal Facebook page. But if you want to submit the friend request, if you're a fan of the NFL, of the Patriots especially, we'll answer that. And then you can post, and then you can chat during the shows. But just keep in mind, it's my own personal Facebook page, so I will take the right to edit anything that I find offensive or delete or report. So just keep that in mind, because my family and my kids watch this Facebook page too.
So keep it clean.
Yeah, I mean, or just keep it decent. That's all I'm asking. You know, sometimes, you know, people get excited and curse words happen, and you know, the occasional F-bomb gets overlooked. I don't really have a problem with that, but I'm kind of like the FCC, you know, Federal Communications Commission. Just try to keep it in good taste. It's what we're looking at here. I mean, we've been talking about scratching balls and everything for the last couple of days, so, you know, and I know that Andy giggles every time we say that, but fact of the matter is that, you know, keep it clean and we'll all be friends here, and that's the whole idea. So that's how you reach us here.
We didn't let the team go because we were stretching out balls.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ed Hockley. Gun Hockley himself, switching his balls.
Did he say switching or stretching?
I think he said switching. Didn't he say switching?
Stretching?
What did he say?
There's no delay of game. We didn't let the team go because we were stretching out balls.
Stretching.
Stretching our balls.
Stretching out?
Stretching out? Really? What? That sounds painful. Okay.
Hey, by the way, John, the Broncos have a new head coach.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up.
They're having a press conference about it right now.
I just said, I got to give Eric full credit for that, because one of the last things you said to us last week was, here's something for you to kind of chew on. I think Gary Kubiak will be the next coach of the Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, the press conference is happening as we speak at this moment. Congratulations on having the prescience to pick that one.
That's your word of the day.
That's my word of the day. I'm sure you'll definitely wow us with one a little bit later. We'll be like going, where the hell did he get that? So anyway, yes, Gary Kubiak, the head coach of your Denver Broncos. Congratulations. That move made too much sense, though. It really did.
Yeah.
Once you thought about it, it never even occurred to me that, you know, they're hiring a coach, you know, that had mixed success at best, really, with Houston. A couple of really good years in there, and then his last year and a half was not very good at all. And it brought him under 500 as a head football coach. I think the analogy that I used on my Patriots.com column today was as well, you know, he's used to carrying John Elway's, you know, clipboard around, so now he's going to have to do it again and just get paid a lot more money for it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's a head coach, so mm-hmm. He's going to get a head coach's salary
sure.
Now. So that's the way it works. We have that, you know, obviously is a big part of it today. And, you know, I know that you probably want to talk a little bit about the whole Deflategate thing. Look, I'm going to kind of sum it up. And I put down some thoughts earlier today. And then about an hour ago, I read our friend Tom E. Curran from CSNNE.com. And I'm going to paraphrase a bit and read you a bit of what he wrote today on the matter, just to kind of sum this up as where we currently stand on this. That, you know, the whole Deflategate started because the Colts apparently first noticed something unusual after DeQuell Jackson picked off Tom Brady in the second quarter. That's where this whole thing started. He gave the ball to a member of the equipment staff who seemed to think the ball was underinflated, and then they notified Chuck Pagano. And then general manager Ryan Grigson got notified in the press box. And then he had notified the NFL director of football operations, Mike Kensel, at the same time. Kensel then told the on-field officials at halftime, Patriots were already up 17-7 in the game. And then the Patriots erupt for 21 points in the third quarter to put this game completely out of reach. And you would have to think that if there was anything improper about the Patriots' set of footballs, which, by the way, gets sequestered 90 minutes before kickoff. Each team has their own set of about 12 balls. I believe it is, Eric. Correct me if I'm wrong. 12 balls that gets checked by the NFL for proper everything almost 2 hours
before
kickoff.
2 hours and 15 minutes.
Okay, 2 hours and 15 minutes. So you're looking at 60, so that's 135 minutes before kickoff. 2 hours and 15 minutes. They're set aside. These are the 12 balls the Patriots will put in play when they're on offense. So if you really wanted to blame somebody, if you can even make the stretch that you wanted to blame somebody for underinflating the ball so they were easier to catch and throw, let's go to the officiating crew first, because they're the ones that had, you know, the ability to put balls in and out of play
right.
If they detected anything
right, there
was
are,
wrong.
There are 12 footballs that the home team provides, 12 that the visiting team provides.
Right.
The home team also has 12 backups, and there are 8 brand new, never before used footballs that are used for the kicking game. Those are specially marked, sealed, sent straight to the officials. They deal with all of those footballs in the hours leading up to kickoff. They are under their auspices at that point. At the very last minute, when the game's about to start, they give those footballs to the sidelines. My thing is, if you're going to take care of it up to that point,
right,
have an impartial league-appointed person on each sideline making sure that those are the footballs that are used,
of course,
that you've checked and approved.
That's on the officiating crew. Now, we will allow four because we did see a football switched out of play in the third quarter. And initially, my thought was when I saw the official throw the ball to the sideline, another one got thrown in and said, oh, it's a wet ball. They want a dry ball because it was pouring.
And we were told it was a kicking ball.
And we were told that it was potentially a kicking ball and that something got mixed up because they were, you know, of the dry footballs. They can't take a dry kicking ball. They got to take a dry playing ball.
Playing one, right.
And so that's apparently what happened. So they tossed one ball that was in play and tossed it out. That's the exchange of the footballs that you may have seen on national television in the third quarter. Now, here's something of what Curran wrote today. He said, two officials handle the ball prior to every snap. They are, on a wet night, checking the ball constantly and toweling them down. A ball that was deemed too soft would, presumably, be noticed quickly. You don't become an NFL official without having extreme attention to detail. And you're not going to feel a ball that's a little soft in the AFC Championship game, shrug and say, eh, good enough, and throw it into play so that your colleague can spot it. You're going to do something about it. It is, after all, an AFC Championship game. The other issue that I have today, and this is part of Nitpick Tuesday, as we always do. For those that may be listening for the first time, Tuesdays, traditionally, we nitpick the previous game. And so this is kind of what we're doing. The other issue that I have is the way that the story came out. Bob Kravitz, who I know you know, and those that have followed the NFL for a long time know that he's covered the Colts for years. And he currently covers them for WTHR-TV and their website. And he's a part of their Sunday night football show on Channel 13 in Indianapolis and all that kind of stuff. He's the one that originally broke the story about, you know, there might be an issue with the balls being underinflated. And that came out late Sunday night, which is why no one really heard anything about this until first thing Monday morning. So that's a little more than, you know, 24, about maybe 36 hours ago. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's completely taken off like a firestorm like you wouldn't believe. I wonder... And again, it's not my place to ask, really, but I'm going to wonder out loud here. How does someone of his stature find out that this thing happened and from whom?
Sources on the Colts, I would
You would
imagine.
Have to assume. Again, we're making assumptions here, and I don't think that we'll ever get to the real bottom of this story, but we're making assumptions that, well, he's got, you know, tight sources within the Colts organization, maybe even down on that sideline that leaked it to him. And so right there, you've got to throw up the stop sign. Because then it becomes self-serving. Then it becomes, you know, sort of, okay, they see that something's wrong. They're trying to get an edge. They think, oh, cheaters, pumpkin eaters, whatever they want to say. And so they've got somebody in the media doing their bidding for them. And I wrote that a little bit in the column today as well, because frankly, that does happen from time to time. Guys who are tight with their teams, they'll take inside knowledge, you know, sources say, and they will break a story based on a source from within the team.
Because they feel like that's how they get a lot of their...
That's how they get the push their agenda forward.
Quid pro quo?
Yes. Quid pro quo indeed. That's the only way that they get their agenda pushed forward is to leak it out to someone that's trusted within the media. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened because, you know, I've read Bob for years and I think he's, you know, a fine journalist and he's a good football guy. You know, he is covering the team now for a television website as opposed to the Indianapolis Star, which he did for years. Nevertheless, somebody in the Colts organization had to give him that info. Somebody did. I think that's, to me...
Source in the NFL.
Some source, you know, that's a good point, Eric. Some source in the NFL gave him the story, because I think we know while it seems like, you know, Mr. Kraft and the Kraft family are friendly and or certainly respectful with Roger Goodell, somebody in the NFL, and I think we all realize this, probably has it out because Bill Belichick just keeps thumbing his nose back at the NFL for whatever reason. You know, for the overinflated rule book, for regulations that seem antiquated, you know, for whatever reason. you know, we've talked for decades, it seems like we've talked about, you know, the whole injury report thing and how you have to report it. And it's gone to ridiculous. So I'm sure there's somebody in the NFL that probably doesn't like Bill Belichick too much. Forget the fact that the Patriots win all the time, or at least it seems like it does, and that they've had 15 years of pretty solid success within the NFL in a league that absolutely thrives on parity. Somebody in the league office is saying, all right, that's enough. We're going to get Belichick this time. So it could be one or the other as the germination for this. Because the NFL, funny, seems a little coincidental. The NFL, when they were contacted first about this story, they were already aware of it. They were already aware of it. So somehow, some way, the Colts reporting it to Bob Kravitz, reporting it to the NFL before the rest of the mainstream world got it, happened all together at once, or happened very soon thereafter. I'm not saying that somebody has an in for the Patriots. What I will say, however, is it's just very coincidental. And we should also add that Greg Aiello, who's the director of public relations for the National Football League, he was asked, in fact, by Mr. Curran on his article today about, you know, when a decision might be coming forward on what exactly happened with, you know, Deflategate.
What did Aiello say?
And let's see, Greg, NFL spokesman Greg Aiello, told me via email that there was no timetable for the investigation and that it would, quote, take as long as necessary, end quote.
I have to believe that with this being the most important fortnight in the NFL calendar, it would behoove the NFL to get this over with sooner rather than later.
You would think so, right? Doesn't common sense tell you that? Do they really want something like this, you know, tarnishing the image of the Shield? Or if there was any wrongdoing, don't you think they'd want to handle that? Or I'm just trying to figure out why they would, you know, want to prolong this if they just didn't like Bill. I mean, you know, if they liked Bill or they say that, you know, hey, all things regal, we treat everybody the same, why wouldn't you get this out of the way so the conversation and the focus could be on football and not a deflated football?
Right, because the last thing anybody wants to talk about in these 2 weeks is something other than the Super Bowl game itself.
Yeah.
Off-field stuff is – nobody wants to talk about that at this time. This is the time to celebrate the league and all the good things about it.
I know.
You know, so it would – you would think, yes, as long as it takes, you want to be diligent and do it. So maybe that's just Aiello's way of saying he doesn't know when there'll be a resolution.
Could be, but it just, you know, when quotes are, you know, given like that via email, it's hard to interpret intent.
You just can't,
which is why email stinks as a mode of communication anyway, but it is what it is.
That's why you have to put the little emoticon. He should have put a wink.
He should have put a little emoji or something, a wink, or, you know, maybe one of those FUs or something. I don't know, you know, just
colon,
do something.
Close paren.
Yeah, you know. Something, right? I don't know. Stupid. I can't keep up with all of them. It's ridiculous. Anyway, I just offer it as food for thought because I know you have your own thoughts on it. We're here to listen to you today. We're here to talk about it. The fact of the matter is the Patriots are in the Super Bowl. This is exactly where many of you listening today, if you're a Patriots fan, this is where you thought the team would be. It's where you thought the team should be, and they haven't let you down. They're in the Super Bowl, 45-7. They blast the Colts in the AFC Championship game, and maybe that's part of the reason why Deflategate began, simply because, sour grapes. I don't know. I don't know if it's anything more or less than that. I actually feel sorry for some of the Colts players who had no idea about this anyway. You know, and now, you know, they're all being looked at and being lumped in together as being, you know, whiny babies that, you know, they have to blame somebody because they got their butts kicked. And I know that's generally how fans think. I don't think that to be the case at all. I think, you know, the Colts are a good football team. They're not a great football team. I think the Patriots played great on Sunday. I think they had to play great for a margin like that to occur. I think the Patriots played the weather and the game planning to the absolute hilt, and they let, you know, LeGarrette Blount do exactly what LeGarrette Blount does well, and that is pound and pound and pound the football to the tune of 30 carries and 148 yards. And that was going to be tough for anybody to stop, whether it was the Seahawks, the Colts, the Cowboys, or, you know, your local YMCA team. Nobody was going to stop that on Sunday. And that's the game played out exactly as the Patriots, as you would want it to. In fact, you know, how many jokes have been out there right now about, Coach Belichick bringing in Air Force planes to seed the clouds to make it rain as much as it did? I mean, I've heard them all over the course of the last 48 hours. And the fact of the matter is, and I said this, you know, in the column, and I think it's appropriate again, haters gonna hate. They just are. And there's going to be no way that you're going to convince someone who believes that there's something mystical or mysterious or even illegal behind all of this. You're not going to convince anybody who already believes that. You're not going to convince them otherwise. You're just not. And so my whole argument has been, look, haters are going to hate. They just look for an excuse. We've just handed them one. The Colts handed themselves a big fat excuse that has backfired in their faces. If that's indeed what, you know, where it came from the sideline and it got to Bob Kravitz and it got to the NFL and then it got to the real world, it backfired on them. Makes them look like whiners. Nobody wants to look like that.
Unless, to be fair, unless the NFL goes through its investigation and finds that there was something
improper that
occurred.
If that happens.
Just playing devil's advocate.
No question, and I think we should. We do that well here on this show. We do play devil's advocate on this show. If that happens, and I'm glad you brought that up, then obviously there will be more than just mea culpas going all around. The Patriots will pay a big fat fine. They might lose draft picks. Kravitz reported that on WTHR, that the Patriots could lose draft picks. And then, of course, you realize that, you know, all of the haters will come out and, in the woodwork and say, see, told you, Patriots were cheating. What I allow, and I just told a Charlotte radio station this, and I just told a New York City radio station this last night. What I think the Patriots do here in this particular instance, and I'm speaking in general terms, I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody in this organization. This is my thought and my thought alone. Okay. I own this. Okay?
All right.
What I think is happening here is that the Patriots, and Eric, I think you'll even agree to an extent, maybe even all the way here, Patriots know how to push the envelope better than anybody else. They know very well what the rules are. They pour, they scour, they examine, they put it under a microscope, every little thing in the rule book, and it's a big one, and it's a thick one. They go over everything looking for something obscure that they might be able to gain an advantage on.
Loopholes. They look for loopholes.
They do. That's the one thing the Patriots do. Is they look for loopholes because they know other people are not looking for the loopholes. And other teams.
Or maybe not as.
Or certainly not as diligently as right. the Patriots do. Mm-hmm. This is all about gaining an edge. This sport is based on what? Parity.
Well, the league is.
The league is based on parity, and that's P-A-R-I-T-Y, not P-A-R-O-D-Y. Two different words, two different meanings. Because this sport is based and thrives, and it is as popular as it is based on equality, and that's the parity that I'm talking about here, the Patriots are simply doing their due diligence better than anybody else. They're trying to gain an advantage. And if they feel they can find a loophole in the rules that allow them to gain even the slightest little toehold of an advantage, they're going to do it. Why? Because you never know when it will help you. In this particular instance, the Patriots, you know, if again, this is all predicated on whether or not they're found, you know, that they did something underhanded here or not. Because I don't really think the Patriots had any knowledge that this was a problem. I really don't. And again, I'm basing that on just my own gut instinct here. I don't have any inside information on that. You know, the Patriots have just dismissed it outright. You know, Tom Brady said here yesterday on Patriots Monday, he laughed at it.
Yeah. I've heard everything, I think he said.
Yes. He says, I think I've heard it all, and he laughed
at it. That seemed to me, because I like to study human nature.
Sure.
And I like to study the way people...
How they initially react. If he had been ready with an argument, then that would have added fuel to the fire of, hey, somebody in that organization knew something.
Right. If he came with almost like a prepared statement
totally
that he
agree.
Was reading off
totally
of,
agree.
That seemed like a very instinctive reaction.
Yeah,
just
he chuckled, just he laughed, he like, says, I'm not going to go. That's just you know,
yeah.
I'm not going there. And that was a little bit more... what's a good word put? That seemed a little more genuine.
Mm-hmm.
It did. It seemed more genuine. So all I can tell you is that the Patriots are simply, this is a case of if they did something, you know, let's just say border on iffy, then this is just a case of them being prepared. And this is just a case of them trying to push the envelope and gain an advantage on an opponent. Nothing more, nothing less. They pushed it too far. A few years ago when it came to the videotaping of team signals on the sidelines.
And they paid the price for it.
And they paid a big, heavy price for it, which tells me, you know, they've been burned once. I don't really think they want to go down that road again. I don't. After they got burnt once on it, I think that they might have been somewhat defiant in terms of trying to, you know, make sure the NFL knows that we're still going to continue to push the rules that we believe are wrong for everybody, not just us, but for everybody in the NFL, and the rules that we think that are antiquated. And I think Bill Belichick does that as well as anybody every week by listing about 20 guys on the injury report, which is pure silliness because we know that 20 guys aren't really injured.
Although this year there haven't been too many instances of that.
Less this year than previous years.
Yeah, there have been fewer players listed. Maybe that's just because they've been healthy, but it hasn't been like the, you know, every little tiny little bump and scratch has been listed. It's been just the opposite. There were one or two weeks when they had a whole lot of guys towards the end of the year because I think it was because it was the end of the year and almost like an excuse for why all these guys aren't going to play.
Sure.
You know, but a week later in the playoffs, it came down to like a half dozen guys or less.
Right. We talked about this a week ago after the Ravens win, you know, because of the whole substitution issue, how they, you know, kind of pulled a fast one on the Ravens. They weren't ready for it.
Yep.
So, you know, why is this week any different from last week? Seems to me to be more of the same in terms of, you know, stretching the limits of what's believable and even what's legal sometimes in order to use it to your advantage. Why should we be surprised by any of this? If there's any credibility or any believability that the Patriots knew what they were doing before any balls got deflated, and I think the whole thing is stupid, but because we're talking about it, because fans are talking about it, because national media is reporting it, because the Colts started the whole damn thing, it's almost like, okay, well, it's legitimate.
I wonder, how much does a ball have to be deflated for you to notice the difference?
You know, that also dawned on me because it has to be what, between like
12.5
and 13.5.
So an average
pounds per square inch, PSI.
Just say 13.
So if it's average 13, what if the team philosophy is, hey, we do like them a little bit lighter, and so it was closer to 12.5, and maybe because of the weather and the conditions and, you know, whatever, it slipped down to like 12.4 or 12.3, and it felt a little lighter. Mm-hmm. I'll allow for that. That could have been legitimate.
Maybe one team goes closer to the 13.5.
Sure.
And one goes closer to the 12.5. So you're almost...
In other words, the Colts like their balls harder.
Possibly.
Football's harder.
Possibly.
Okay.
Is it that much of a difference that you would be able to take note? I don't know.
I don't know.
You can certainly tell when a ball is overinflated.
Sure. Sure, you know, because it doesn't
it
look
feels
normal.
Hard, yeah. Like a rock,
right.
And it's...
Yeah, it doesn't look normal.
No, and it's harder to...
Yeah.
Almost
grip.
Harder to grip.
Yeah, you can't grip it.
You know, and you can tell when one is really flat and needs to be filled up because it's...
Yeah, it sags.
Yeah. That minute amount of between a pound, I mean,
I think the Colts were tipped off that this might be a problem, and I think it boils down to what I read a couple of times was that in the Patriots win in November on the web in Indianapolis that they thought that there might have been an issue with underinflated balls even then, and so they were like, hey, you know, if we catch one of Brady's balls this time, give it a squeeze, and if it feels like this or feels like that, throw it out of play or bring somebody's attention to it.
Yeah.
I don't know what they thought they were going to accomplish with that. They should have taken care of it at the time.
And again, how do you know how much the weather had a factor in that? Who knows? It's, you know what?
I know.
It's a ridiculous topic.
Fact of the matter is, you know,
they would have gotten their butts blown
out one way
or the other.
I heard a very respected, you know, columnist and television personality, Michael Wilbon, who's on PT on ESPN and has written a column in Washington for a number of years as well. He said, hey, Patriots are found guilty. They should kick them out of the Super Bowl. Come on, Mike. You're smarter than that. That's not ever going to happen.
Just make it a default Seahawks win?
Just, in other words, vacate the game and the Seahawks win.
That's going to happen.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Sure. Yeah. I think there's a little too much money involved here, number one, in that. You know, the even stupider suggestion was to put the Colts in the game after getting beat 45-7.
Right.
That's legit.
Yeah, after everybody's gone.
So you're talking about the integrity of the game already being attacked. What are you doing to it now, Mike?
Yeah, good Lord.
Come on.
That's idiotic.
It is idiotic. That's the stupidest thing I think I've heard in 2 days. And I respect Wilbon beyond belief, and I love his show. And I think, you know, he and Tony Kornheiser are brilliant together on television. I do. And I've loved him for a number of years. But that was pretty dumb. All right. You have your opinions. It's time for you. Before you leave, two things. Number one, your thoughts on the game, because you told us last week you didn't think it would be close.
I didn't. I thought after three previous Andrew Luck games, in which he got handled pretty well. His team was handled pretty well by the Patriots. I thought they're not going to let this happen again. They're going to be prepared enough. They're going to make it close, but they're not going to get blown out. What I didn't account for, John, was how badly Luck played. Because he played fairly well in those other three blowouts. It wasn't his fault that they lost those games. I think he was a major factor in the reason why they got blown out, because he didn't have it from the get-go. Opening series, you could see he was throwing the ball erratically to open guys, and it was going to be one of those days. He didn't have a good game. I didn't anticipate that. So the game got out of hand for them quickly, and I thought that by the early second half, the Colts had decided that they were giving up.
I kind of felt like that too. Especially, you know, going into the fourth quarter, I said this game's over.
They had some life at the end, because in the second quarter, the Patriots kind of played sloppy. They had penalties, they had turnovers, they were not playing well. And I thought the Colts had some life at the end there when they got the score. They cut it to seven, and then go into the locker room only down 10. Given how badly you played, a second half can be completely different from a first half. You're in that game. 17-7, you're in that game.
Right.
They gave up. Patriots came out, scored. That was it.
It was over.
It was over. It was over. And Luck never got any better.
Nope.
So I didn't anticipate that.
All right. So we want your thoughts on the game, obviously. There are a few nitpicks about the actual game itself that I will share with you. I would suppose as well that, we could begin to kind of look at Seattle, although we're going to have plenty of time to talk about that. Look, the game plan is going to be, you know, we're all going to be here this week, and then I know the PFW guys, Sunday or Monday, you guys are going to head for Arizona, correct?
One of those days,
yep. One of those days. And then the PFW In Progress show next week will be from Arizona.
We'll be from the team hotel,
which is nice. Not press row or not, media row.
Nope, we'll be the only ones with that close an access to the team.
No, inside the team hotel, and then I'm going to hold the fort down here in Foxborough and do the playbook next week from right here inside our Gillette Stadium studio. So we'll be able to go back and forth and share, and we'll still be here for you all next week, actually leading up to the game itself on February 1st. Mm-hmm. So before we get to your calls, what we'll
try to do too is when we do our crossovers,
yes,
make the crossovers a little longer so we get a chance to interact with you from the hotel.
You're there and I'm here.
No, but just kind of, I think it would be cool, like, instead of just, see you later.
John's feeling a little hurt right now.
I don't blame him.
22 years, where's my Super Bowl ticket?
You mad, bro?
That's well done, Kevin.
Oh, no, you're going to ask him, because he didn't finish the game. Ice up, son, ice up.
Wow, you mad,
like
bro.
I like it. That's all right.
That's good, Kevin.
That's actually really
all right.
Good.
Time for the word of the day.
Yeah, okay.
You can't tell that I'm blushing, but that's good. That's good.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's word of the day.
Make it count.
Sedulous.
Sedulous. S-E-D. No?
Yeah.
S-E-D-U-L-O-U-S?
You got it, man.
See, I could always spell. I'm my fourth grade spelling bee champion, so I could always spell. Okay? I have no idea what it means, but I can spell. All right, what is
it means? Sedulous? It means to...
Anything to do with inflated balls.
Well, no. I mean, you know what? Maybe we can make it. We can always put it in the sentence.
We can always stretch those balls.
Great. That ball there has silicone on it.
It means to be diligent, assiduous, to pay careful attention to detail when...
Right. Sedulous. Okay.
Okay, sedulous.
Sedulous.
So, you really want to apply it to the balls? Sorry,
yeah, or? Absolutely.
All right, then maybe when it comes to the oversight of NFL footballs, the NFL needs to be a little bit more sedulous in who oversees them.
That's true. Okay, I'll buy that.
If there's anything to this story.
If there's anything to this story, which of course is a big if, right? Okay.
So, sedulous. See, we made it. We made it.
We always
find a way.
We always do that.
We are in that way very sedulous.
That's true. We do, you know.
Because we tie in the word of the day. We try to do that.
Some football terminology. That's right.
Yeah, or whatever the story of the day is.
That's right.
All right, so I got to go to the dentist.
All right. Oh, geez. Are you going to drill today?
I hope not. It's just supposed to be a checkup.
Wow.
My ears hurt now.
Kevin's. Yuck. He's right on it today. All right, happy drilling. Hope they don't find oil.
Talk to you later. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, you will. We'll be here. All right. You've got the numbers.
He hopes.
You've got the email address. You've got the Twitter. You've got the Facebook. Now it's time for you. Let's get a break in real quick, Kev, because we may not get one in the rest of the day. So we'll say thank you to our sponsors, and the playbook rolls on.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No, pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown! Ha ha!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Want to step inside the playbook? Hit up John toll-free on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the man, the myth, the legend himself, John Rook.
I got something from Rick on Facebook here who says, here's a question comment I haven't heard that I'm confused about. I heard the Colts felt deflated balls during the first time we played them when they picked off Brady twice, and then they informed the league. Then Sunday night happened. So why haven't other teams accused the Patriots of this? Why do the Patriots only deflate balls when they play the Colts? And why would the Patriots deflate balls when playing in the Dome? There are simply way too many voids and holes in all of this. I think that's a legitimate question to ask, Rick, and I'm glad you sent it. I would sort of ask the same thing. So why does this seem to be happening to the Colts? And it tells me that if something was going on, the Patriots were already in the heads of the Colts. And as I tried to explain to a couple of audiences listening in Charlotte, North Carolina on radio earlier today and in New York City last night, this is, if there's anything to it at all, and I'm not saying that there is, because I really don't, in my heart of hearts, I don't think that there is anything to it. But if there is, this is all gamesmanship. And the Patriots now are going to let this play out as far as it'll play out. Why? Because it distracts from the game. You think the Seattle Seahawks are worried about the pressure per square inch on the football? No. No, they're worried about trying to, you know, how do we defend Rob Gronkowski? How do we make Tom Brady one-dimensional? How do we slow down LeGarrette Blount? How do we, you know, get what could be an average receiving core largely loose against guys like Darrell Revis and the guy Brandon Browner, who we know very well? How are we going to do all of this? That's what they're thinking about. They're not thinking about deflated footballs. I can almost guarantee that. All right, let's get to the phones. Thanks, everybody, for hanging on today, because I'm sure there are a lot of you that want to get through. I'm going to ask you to just, you know, kind of hold it to a question and a comment if you like, and then we're going to try to move on and get as many of you in as we can. And waiting the longest thus far today has been Dana in Connecticut. Hey, Dana, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, thank you very much for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
A couple things. One is winners give reasons, such as we lost to a better team. Losers make excuses, such as it was the Patriots cheating. That's all I got to say on that. They need to put this storyline to bed quickly, the NFL does, because this is not a storyline that you want to linger into the Super Bowl. It tarnishes the image of everything, not just the Patriots. It just makes the game, it belittles the game, and it's insulting.
Of course it does.
The other thing I have to say, and I know you have a lot of people waiting, is I think a lot of Patriot fans and Patriot even analysis folks are drinking the Kool-Aid based on this lopsided win against Indy.
Yep.
Indy is not a good team at any phase or any level. They got there. They took the high road there, and they're not good. Seattle is going to be a three-point battle, two-point battle. It's going to be a war. So if people think that the Patriots suddenly are in the driver's seat, that we really need to play our A game at every level, especially the offensive line.
I couldn't agree more. I would tell you that I do think the Colts are a little better than they showed on Sunday. I think that the Patriots just played an exquisite football game. But, the Colts just simply weren't a match. The Seahawks will be a match and then some. They are the defending champions. I think it's ironic and even proper that they have a chance to be the first repeat champ since the Patriots did it in 03-04. So I think that's very, very proper for this one. And who's standing in their way from doing it? The Patriots. And I think the New England guys respect that. I think our players respect that immensely because, you know, there are a couple of them that are actually around for that 10 years ago. And so they know what goes into it. The younger guys don't so much, but certainly Tom Brady and Vince Wilfork know that. So I I think they like the role of being somewhat underdogs. I think they like the role of not a lot being expected of them. And I think they also understand that Seattle is big. They are physical. They are quick, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And if they let Russell Wilson get out of the pocket, they've got to contain him. If they let him get out of the pocket, they're going to be in for a long day.
Yeah, I think the pressure is certainly on our defense, because if we contain him and we hold Marshawn Lynch to maybe 96 to even 110 yards, that's damage control. I think we win. John, do you think I see us influence blocking that speed defense and getting a little work done in the middle there, and especially with our crossing routes underneath quick passes? I think that's where their weakness is, in that intermediate middle zone and in their interior line. Do you see that as a weakness?
I've seen Seattle play probably a half a dozen times on TV. I'll be looking at them a lot more closely over the course of the next 2 weeks. And I would tell you, at least initially, I think teams can run a bit on Seattle. They're pretty good, but I think they can be run on. They do have big physical corners still, and they do have maybe two of the best safeties overall. We don't know yet what the injury situation. Earl Thomas is a guy that, you know, if you know anything about my background, you know I love him because he's a Texas guy. And he's as, you know, strong and as fast as any safety maybe in the NFL. And I would think that Thomas would probably see an assignment of Gronkowski, even though he's going to give up a lot of height there just because of his toughness and his physical nature. And so it'll be interesting to see how he progresses. It'll be interesting to see how Richard Sherman progresses, since he's got, you know, the bum elbow now, and whether or not he's going to be 100% for the game. And let me tell you this, that if either one of those guys are less than 100%, if I'm the Patriots, man, am I attacking? You've got to find the opponent's, you know, Achilles heel and go after it, because this is the game that legacies are made. People remember champions. They don't remember runners-up.
That's right. I'm surprised the Packers didn't exploit that. I was saying
they should have, and that's part of the reason why the Packers, in my humble opinion, committed one of the biggest title game chokes in NFL history.
Oh, absolute, without doubt. No question. Okay, John, thank you very much.
Dana, thanks for the phone call. Next up is McCabe in Virginia. Hello, McCabe.
Hey, guys.
How are you, buddy?
Good. First, I'm going to say that this whole deflating balls thing is, it's definitely tarnishing the Super Bowl in a way, because, you know, a lot of people who aren't fans, who would usually watch it, may not watch it now because they think the whole sport is bad, like everyone cheats, kind of.
Well, I don't think they think everybody cheats. I think that the fans are going to point to the Patriots, because it seems like the Patriots are always involved in these off-field issues. And the only thing I'll tell you is that the Patriots, as I said earlier, the Patriots are the one team, and there are others that do it. They just probably don't do it as often or as push it as far as other teams do it. But the Patriots push the envelope to the limit of what the rules would tell you you can legally do and legally not do. They push it as far as anybody can. And to me, that means they're just trying to overturn every stone they can to gain an advantage over the opposition. This game is about winning. This game is about winning championships, about trying to gain an edge in a league that has been built on being equal and giving everybody a chance. And that's why the Patriots do what they do.
Yeah. Also, I'm not quite sure how cold it was. Wasn't it like in the 40s or something in that game?
Yeah, it was in the 40s, and obviously it poured in the second half.
Yeah, because it could definitely be possible that the weather could have affected the PSI of the ball.
Sure. Sure, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. In fact, you know, it absolutely could have. I don't know to what extent, because I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm not even a football scientist, McKay. But I'll tell you that, you know, anything can happen. And if the Patriots like the ball a little softer than what the legal, you know, than what the maximum legal limit was, yeah, it's possible. Anything could have happened to make the ball a little bit softer. It could have been a football that Gronk spiked earlier, you know, that got deflated because he just jammed it into the ground at 100 pounds per, you know, ounce or whatever, you know?
Could have been when that lineman dove in the...
Of course.
You know, that could have just...
It could be anything, which is why the NFL had best try to get this thing cleaned up as quickly as possible. Otherwise, they're just as guilty as anybody else here. Okay?
Yep.
You got it. Thanks for the phone call. Next up is Ben in Texas. Ben, you're in the playbook.
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good, Ben. Texas. You betcha.
So, I've got to say, every time we win, once again, we come under fire for, well, winning. Reasonable doubt That's what it's going to come down to. The NFL is not going to want to mar their Super Bowl with anything less than absolute certainty. So it's going to come down to reasonable doubt. There's too many what-ifs. We've covered them already in the playbook. But what I think is going to happen, what is already happening, is all the haters are already coming out, bringing out. I saw an article that said we have an advantage because we can see the CBS team monitor from our sideline. Like, there's not monitors showing replays everywhere else in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen is the Patriots are going to rally, and that's going to be that. And we're going to hear everything, just like we heard how Brady's done, and we're done, and it's the end of the dynasty, and we're going to rally. And we're going to come together, and I think it's going to be a tour de force that the Seahawks have never seen.
Right. Well, I think, you know, your points are well taken. You know, hard for me to, you know, put any argument in that one. So I think you're pretty much right on about it.
Absolutely, man. I've entered like 14 Super Bowl ticket contests, so hopefully see them in person.
Look, I can't imagine that this game is going to be anything but a good game. Criticize the NFL however you want. These are the two best teams in the league this year, and I don't think there's even a discussion over it. You know, if Aaron Rodgers did not have the gimpy left leg, then I could still make a case for Green Bay being good enough to be in this game. But because he's hurt, he's less than 100%, and I think these two teams have their best players at 100%. Now, I say that cautionarily, but only because we don't know what Richard Sherman's status will be, and we probably won't know for another day or two. And we don't know what Earl Thomas's, you know, status is going to be, because they were both hurt in the win over the Packers. You know, it's frankly a little bit amazing to me that the Seahawks are even in the game, because I think Green Bay coughed up the biggest hairball for an NFL playoff game I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my goodness.
That was spectacularly gross. And
at one point the Seahawks had a 0.1% chance of winning in the fourth quarter. I will say this as a last note, that people said to me, oh, aren't you worried about Seattle? Wouldn't you rather face Green Bay? I would personally rather beat the best team. I don't want to worry about facing a lesser team. I want the very best. Bring your A game. Show me what you got. And, you know, let the truth be told.
Sure. And I would argue that if Green Bay had held on to that win, that they would have been the best team. But they didn't. And that shows a flaw. That shows a flaw. The best team Seattle never gave up. They played like crap in the first half. They didn't play very well for the most of the third quarter. And then they started to turn it around a little bit, and Green Bay let them back into the game. They
Green
did.
Bay not play to win. They only played not to lose.
That's exactly
Mike McCarthy and John Fox will never be on the same coaching level as disciples of Bill Parcells.
Bingo. You hit it right on the head. They played not to win. They played just to move on, and you can't do that. This game, above all, has to be played with blinders on to the scoreboard. You know, you just can't worry about it. You got to go out and play your game, and you got to keep putting your foot on the pedal, because we've seen what can happen in pro football this year. And I think that's what the Patriots actually did themselves this weekend when they were playing the Colts. They had to.
I guarantee you, Russell Wilson throws four interceptions in the next 2 weeks, that Seattle will be left wondering, scratching their heads, is this really our quarterback?
Well, if he does throw, you know, I think if he throws even two picks against the Patriots, you know, win this by double digits. Because I think the Patriots are as adept at taking advantage of a team's mistakes as any team in the NFL at present. Now, the same also goes for Seattle. If they pick off Tom Brady a couple of times and they get short yardage situations, you know, for Seattle's offense, which is, you know, to me, it's okay. It's not a great offense. It's a good offense. But if they give them a short field to work with, the way the Patriots defense can give up yards sometimes, then I think the Patriots can also lose by double digits.
I agree. But what I think the key difference is going to be not coming into here heavily favored like we were against the Giants. We're underdogs. We're going to rally. And Brady has that chip on his shoulder that he's had since he was 6'6". And he walked out of the draft in the fourth round crying with his parents. And, you know, he's going to go out there and he's going to show the entire world,
sure,
I'm still here. I'm not handing over the mantle yet.
That may very well happen. That's good stuff,
Ben. Have a good day.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Miles in Boston up next here on the Playbook. Hello, Miles.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good, bud.
It's just so sad that people have just taken it and just missed everything. I mean, when the ball changed, they said that was when it happened. And it was clearly said it was a kickball and not a game ball, and but they want to run with it and all that. I don't care if Brady was throwing Dunkin' Donuts all over the place. It's still, the score would have been the same. Okay, if you would have took that out of the game and put Blunt in there, guess what? It would have been 21-7 and what? it doesn't matter which way you look at it. It was you lost. That's it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's just so ugly that it has to happen at this time of the season, right before going into the big game, to add another fuel to the fire of what New England is about, or what they want us to be, you know, what everybody else think we're about.
Yep.
And it's just sad. The Green Bay game, they gave that. They just gave that away. They had total control over every single thing, down to the last 5 minutes of the game. And I don't know. I think after watching what Green Bay did, I think we can step up. I mean, our biggest problem, period, is beast mode. And if he comes out, and then also if what's his name comes out the pocket, Wilson, if he can scramble better than anybody, and he has this tremendous knowledge of where everybody's at, it's like he has eyes behind his head. I think those are the two most dangerous people on offense, just those two alone. But if we can contain him, which we haven't really done great with because we were scared of Rodgers and we didn't play that right either.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that it's going to be definitely a tough match, and it's going to have to be a mistake-free game.
I agree with that. It's got to be mistake-free. It has to be mistake-free. And let's say you make the first mistake, then it's incumbent upon your defense or your kicking, your special teams, to get one back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the thing about it is that, now, I'll give us this. On our kick return, we can get some, I think we're good enough to tip that we can, but they do actually have a good special teams also. They actually have a good special team. They actually have a good all-the-way-around team, except for maybe the offense, you know, as far as, certain plays and stuff like that. But it's also, the only time they come big is when Russell scrambles and his team gets, you know, people tired of running, and he makes something happen. You know what I'm saying? So it's on his shoulders right there. But I'd like to see what Bill's going to throw up on this one because, like I said, I don't like the way that we create Rodgers scared our front seven and we dared him to do whatever.
I thought against Aaron Rodgers, playing Green Bay early this year, that I don't know that they were scared. Is that I actually thought they did an okay job of defending him. I don't think the offense played up to snuff. So that's really where I put the loss at Green Bay. If the offense had a better game, then I think the Patriots win that game, to be honest with you. I don't think that they played him poorly. I think they played him well enough to win. They just didn't.
Yeah, I guess what it is, I'm just not used to seeing someone have 11 seconds in the pocket.
Well, now that's true, and that's something that has to be fixed. And you know, that was also, if I'm not mistaken, without Chandler Jones. So, you know, and not that he's the be all to end all, but you want everybody in, you know, and everybody healthy and everybody available, so anybody can play on any given situation or any given moment or any given set of downs. And the Patriots didn't have that. So I think for what they had at that time, they played well enough. They just didn't play well enough to win the game.
Yeah, but it is. The funny thing is, I'm looking at Jones. I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed since he's been back.
Yeah, I know.
We
had some others say that last week as well. And I think two things on this. Number one, he might be still trying a little bit too hard. Number two, I'd tell you that his assignment, is certainly to put pressure on the quarterback, but his biggest criticism, and this is a legitimate criticism, has been that he doesn't hold the edge well, and that's why teams run at him. And this is what worries me about Marshawn Lynch, you know, heading for his side of the line and finding that crease, and if he doesn't hold the edge, he's going to have a huge hole. He's got to hold his edge and hold his blocker. And sometimes if he's trying to get outside that blocker, that hole becomes big enough for a boulder to go through. And that's
exactly.
Where.
Maybe...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I said exactly. Maybe Bill has another surprise for us and he puts Fleming on that side.
Well, they could do anything. I think you'll see different looks. I think you'll probably see them, you might even see some guys standing up at the line of scrimmage. You'll see some multiple man fronts. You'll see three. You'll see six. You'll see guys drop back into coverage. I mean, you'll see these guys. Look, I think the general thing right off the top, Miles, and we got 2 weeks to talk about this, but
right.
I would tell you that, it seems to me the one thing Seattle does very well is run the football with Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
So if they run the ball well, then you're probably going to want to make sure that you got seven in the box to defend what they do best And therefore, you got to go man-to-man against your receivers and tight ends. And I think that's what the Patriots will do, feeling that, like that athletically, the Patriots, you know, secondary is going to be able to man up and not give up a lot.
Right.
To Seattle, and if that's the case, then they can devote a little extra time, you know, in the front seven, which is what they need to be doing. And I think they'll change their looks, and I don't think that you'll see a regular package all the time. You'll probably see some nickel in there to depending on the situation and what have you, and maybe just to confuse the heck out of those guys. And it's still way right. early to kind of look at the game plan, but this is what the Patriots have done all season long. So why would the Super Bowl be any different? Their goal is to make Seattle come at them one-dimensionally. And so if they struggle to run the football, then they're going to want to make sure that Russell Wilson has to stay in the pocket. And if he's still in the pocket and they don't let him go and get outside the pocket and do the damage with his legs, which we know he can do, then the Patriots feel like they got a chance.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely give him a chance. At first, I was feeling really funky about it because I think you and I discussed it weeks ago. And I really felt like, oh, no. But the O-line's been holding up. I mean, don't get me wrong. This front seven's probably the best they're ever going to face. And the fastest front seven you're ever going to see. And most talented. Mm-hmm. So the thing about it is, we'll definitely see on that end. It will tell a story really fast.
No question.
And we'll probably make some adjustments, but you're not going to be able to stop with something. When someone starts punching you in your face really hard,
right.
After a while you get bruised.
Right. Totally agreed. Good stuff, Miles.
All right, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's get in Justin in Virginia here real quick. Justin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, what's going on, John? I'm not going to come out here and pretend that I know we did or didn't do it. But what I'm tired of is, like, they can't – and the deflated ball is supposedly supposed to help the offense, right, our offense?
In theory.
The problem to me with this whole thing is Andrew Luck, you can't go out and put up 7 points and expect to win. I don't care if we were deflating balls or we weren't. I'm saying it's wrong to do it, and it's wrong that we did Spygate and all that. But it seems like a lot of excuse-making. You cannot go out and put up 7 points and expect to win a playoff game, man.
Nope, that's true. That's true. That has to be on Indianapolis. That's true, which is why the whole, you know, Deflategate thing seems like sour grapes and very little more than that.
And part of the problem with, like, the league in general, with all this scandalous tea and everything, it seems like coaches get cut too easily. And it seems like there's such desperation to win every game that we're starting to forget, to some extent, it's just a game. It's just a game. And we need to come back to that a little bit. I understand it's a job and everything, but it's entertainment. And this Spygate or this Deflategate thing isn't, like, helping anybody. It's going to ruin the Super Bowl. For, like, the more naive fans that actually look at this as they're deflating balls, the Seahawks fans are going to, like, be looking at the balls more than the game.
You know, I have to think, Justin, that Seahawks fans and the whole 12th man thing that they do, and they've got as good a home field advantage as anybody in sport has. Forget the NFL. I'm talking about worldwide sport. It's probably just as good in Seattle as it is any other place. I've got to think that Seattle fans really, really don't think there's anything to this. If they're going to reach and grasp at something as insipid as Deflategate to hang on to, then they're not as smart as I think they are.
Yeah, but thank you, John.
All right, Justin. That's good stuff, as always. Appreciate that. Let's get Noel in Denver here in the playbook. Hey, Noel.
John, how you doing?
Great, buddy.
Wow, terrific game, wasn't it?
All right, hang on just a second. I'm going to put you on hold because your cell is breaking up big time. So either you can try to call back in or wait for it to clear up if you're in a bad area. In the meantime, while we wait for Noel, let's bring in Eric Friends, who joins us on Nitpick Tuesdays here on Tuesdays throughout the course of the football season of the Patriots playbook. And Eric covers the AFC East and the Patriots for Boston.com. Mr. Friends, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
Deflated any balls lately?
Well, actually, I was going to say that, you know, I couldn't deflate my balls during the game, so I had to wait until after, unfortunately.
There's all kinds of innuendos that I could go with right there, but I think I'll just hold it right where it is. What? Let me get your take on this entire issue, and whether or not, you know, it's nothing any more than sour grapes. What should happen if maybe the NFL does find out that there was some impropriety going on? You know, it seems to me that this is a decision, and we've had pretty much a unanimous, you know, opinion on that thus far. This is a decision that needs to come sooner rather than later if you're looking at the NFL trying to stray away from controversy at all.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too, is that it's funny because we're hearing, you know, there are reports that it could take until next Monday for them to come out with the details of what the league's investigation turns up. But ultimately, you know, I don't know that this is really going to hang over the Patriots this week. I think they've pretty much moved on from it, and at this point, it would surprise me if you heard another word of it from the Patriots.
Yeah, first of all, I think you're 110% correct. I don't think the Patriots will address it, and you know, it'll be one of those next question type of things if somebody does address it, and they're not going to, because you know as well as anybody, having covered this team now, that you know they're really good at not letting distractions get into the locker room or getting into their train of thought at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously the insanity of Super Bowl week can get everybody kind of up in a stir, and it'll be interesting to see how that happened or how that goes down, how that plays out over the next couple of weeks. But certainly, you know, like you said, I wouldn't expect to hear much from them.
No. So while that's the case, what should be the concern now for this football team that's going to, you know, took today off, going to take tomorrow off as well before they start preparing for, you know, Seattle the day after? Based on what you saw on Sunday against the Colts, what does this team need to improve upon?
Yeah, tough question. I mean, it's Nitpick Tuesday, and normally I call in and you have me tell you my nitpicks. I almost didn't even call in this week because I don't know that there's much I could say.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, I look at it and definitely, you know, the one area that you would like to see improvement in it from a consistency standpoint is the pass rush. I know that they really got after Andrew Luck this past week. They did a good job of creating some pressure. Rob Ninkovich specifically got a lot of pressure, and Chandler Jones did well as well. But you'd like to see it on a more consistent basis. I think they'll have opportunities against Russell Wilson. That Seahawks offensive line is not great in pass protection, much better blocking in the running game. But one thing that, you know, I would definitely prepare yourself for if you're a Patriots fan is a lack of pass rush from the Patriots against the Seahawks, because my guess is they're going to put three guys on the line and drop everybody else into coverage and have a spy on Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they want to get those guys too far upfield and give Wilson open room to run.
I think that's a great plan. That has to be at least under consideration, because Russell Wilson's legs, I think, are the one X factor that Seattle has on offense that the Patriots haven't really defended, or even defended very well for that matter, when they've had a chance to defend a quarterback like that this year. And that's the one area that I think Seattle can beat New England, is by letting him get out and do damage on the ground. You got to find a spy for him somewhere. And so it means you're going to have to rely on man coverage in the secondary, so the front seven can hopefully do their job, not only by keeping Wilson in, but also by limiting Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, that's going to be a real point of emphasis. Not only that, but just gap integrity overall. Like you mentioned with Marshawn Lynch, I think one problem that defenders get is that they get out of their lanes, because, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword with Lynch, because you want to swarm the ball and you want to get multiple tacklers around him to get him down, but you also don't want guys leaving their gaps to do that. And so there's a balance that you have to get. You know, you have to be able to contain your gap for the time that it takes Lynch to get to the line. And then once he's there and staggering, you have to, you know, like the shark in water, it smells blood. You got to go after it and really bring him down all at once.
Sure. So, anything else from the game on Sunday stand out to you, whether it was good, it was bad, surprising? You know, the one thing that I keep coming back to is that I really was surprised as poorly as Indianapolis played. You know, when they scored in the second quarter, 93-yard drive, which, by the way, the Patriots had a couple of third-down penalties that kept that drive alive and allowed the Colts to score. When it was 14-7, You know, I still haven't really been able to decipher whether or not that game hinged on New England playing better from there or the Colts playing worse from there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and I think it's probably a little bit of both. You know, I looked back at some of the film, and I didn't see a whole lot in terms of anything that would really signify, you know, the Colts just kind of, you know, letting their foot off the gas. I think they just, I think the Patriots just got the better of them more or less, and especially in the running game where it just looked like those guys were firing off the ball, and Blunt really took that game over. I mean, as much as the Patriots running game opened up holes for him, you know, he was really there to create the extra yards on his own with some surprising bounce cuts and obviously the hard-nosed running we've come to know from him. So I think, you know, the way that the Patriots play when they play the Colts, it's just like such a unique brand of football. Not really unique. I mean, unique to the Patriots, not unique to the NFL, just that we don't see them run that real smash mouth style of offense very often. But every time the Colts come up, they seem to pull out all those 1960 formations with, you know, power eye and everything, you know, have an extra backs and extra tackles and all that. Everything that, you know, really helps them ground and pound against a softer Colts run defense. That's really been susceptible against them.
Sure. Eric Friends, Boston.com, with us here in the playbook again on a Nitpick Tuesday. All right, so, Eric, before we kind of, you know, I'm going to try to take this in measured doses since we got 2 weeks to talk about this game.
Right.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about, you know, the two coaching hires in the AFC East where, you know, Rex Ryan, and I think we talked about this briefly last week, joining Buffalo, but Todd Bowles now going to New York. And the fact that, you know, within the AFC East, Woody Johnson, the Patriots, you know, filed tampering charges against him for his quotes against Darrelle Revis about a week or so ago, which I found kind of strange in terms of the timing and everything.
Yeah, quite a lot of other stuff going on in the AFC East. I'll start with the Jets and the Todd Bowles hire. And I really like that move because I think, you know, overall, to me, it looks like, you know, Todd Bowles can come in and he can coach a similar style of defense to the defense that he coached in Arizona. It's been built in that 3-4 scheme for quite some time, and having him come in able to bring his scheme and bring some of the wrinkles that he has, that should be good for them. I think that group, especially up front, they have some talent, and the back end they could use some help. But Bowles, he has some experience as a defensive back coach, so wouldn't be a huge surprise for me, from my perspective, to see him get the most out of guys like Dean Milliner and Dexter McDougal and other guys back there. And
sure.
As far as Rex Ryan goes, I think it's interesting because he goes, I think he must have walked through a minefield or caught amnesia at some point between when he got let go by the Jets and when he got hired by the Bills, because he is stepping into almost the exact same situation that he stepped into that he left when he was the head coach of the Jets. You know, a good defense without a quarterback and with some real limitations on offense. I think it's interesting, you know, you'll see him get the most out of that defense. And I think that group was really good to begin with. I don't know that there's a whole lot he can improve on that side of the ball. So really it's going to be up to whoever comes in running that offense. They're going to have to do a really good job without much resources because they're not going to be able to improve the quarterback position anytime soon. And as for the tampering charges, I'd be really interested to see how that all plays out. You know, Woody Johnson, it was probably the most boneheaded statement I've ever heard from an owner.
Yeah,
really, to come out and just say we would love to have Darrelle Revis on the team. You have to know that that's against the rules. And I think, you know, he probably just got caught up in the moment. He thinks of himself as a fan, and he probably just got caught up in the moment of, you know, answering a question about a player that he's been fond of in his career as the owner. And I think that's really what it comes down to. But it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I do think that the Patriots have a real case, but, you know, I don't know that there's really a whole lot for them to worry about. I don't know that, you know, that Woody Johnson coming out and saying we want Darrelle Revis to be here would be the difference in whether or not he comes back to New England next season.
Eric, I would add, in this particular instance, if he really wanted Darrelle Revis in New York, why the hell didn't he sign him last year when Revis wanted to go there? I mean, this is an egregious error in judgment by an NFL owner who's got to know better.
Well, I think when he was saying we wanted Darrelle Revis here, he was also saying Darrelle Revis didn't want to be here. I think that was probably also part of it.
But we know that's not true.
Well, I mean, you know that you've heard that it's not true, and there's also been, you know, been some other reports out there that he wanted to come here and take a pay cut or take less money to come here so that he had a better opportunity to win. So, you know, it's gone both ways, I think, there, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out in the long run. But I do think, you know, whenever you have a situation like this, it kind of does go both ways.
Yeah, I suppose it does. I just, you know, if you're an owner, you have to have more savvy than that. And I didn't see any. And you're right, he let the fanboy get out in him. And it should cost him a little bit, certainly a slap on the wrist, I would think. And, you know, of course, I always kind of, you know, juxtapose that with what Revis has been saying in the last, you know, 2 days since winning an AFC championship, how, you know, the reason he came here was to play in games like that and to play in the game like the one he's going to get to play in 2 weeks. Thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, and that plays into what I was saying earlier about him, you know, not necessarily wanting to go to New York, but wanting to, I mean, I'm sure he would have welcomed an opportunity to reunite with Rex Ryan in New York and how beneficial that relationship was for both parties. I mean, Darrell Revis wasn't Revis Island until Rex Ryan showed up in New York, so I think that does say something, and I think, you know, that's been, that kick-started his career, but I mean, he's been playing really well on his own ever since then. And, I mean, last week was no exception. I thought there was one pass breakup that he had against, I think it might have been, it was either T.Y. Hilton or Dante Moncrief. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was Akeem Nicks. I can't remember who. But he was downfield, and he just climbed the guy and broke up the pass. It looked like it might have been P.I., but I think he really just did a great job of getting up there and climbing the ladder and breaking that ball up, and that's kind of a testament to him. I think also that interception was a huge testament to him and his ability to, you know, come off of that pick route on the inside and really, you know, peel off and get underneath that underthrown ball and pick it off and nearly run it back for a touchdown, almost kind of shades of Ty Law in the Super Bowl.
I was just going to say that. I know a bunch of people in the press box made that sort of comparison, and that's the first thing I said. He's running the ball back, and I'm looking at John Zanini, who spots for me in the press box, and I'm saying, he looks just like Ty Law. And John looks at me, and he said, well, he's wearing the same number. So
yeah.
I said, yeah, but, I mean, it looked almost like the same play, almost the same play.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Eric, that's good stuff. Are you going to be traveling next week, or are you going to have time to join us on Tuesday?
I am not traveling. I will be right here, and I will be available to chat. So looking forward to it.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks a lot, John. Good talking to you, man.
You too. Eric Friends, Boston.com, covers the AFC East and the Patriots for Boston.com, and he joined us here on Nitpick Tuesdays. All right, let's get right back to the phones. Thanks to Melvin in Tennessee for hanging on. Hello, Melvin.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good, bud.
I'm so over the flat balls talk. I'm done with that. Inflated balls, whatever.
Deflate gate? Right. Come on, Melvin. You got to get the terminology right. Deflate gate.
I can't remember this. What's the other one? I can't remember that
right.
either.
You're pretty funny. I like that. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, you know, When it involves my teams, I kind of ignore stuff.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, I get it. I follow you.
Yeah, yeah. So, getting on to the games, I think it's interesting. I kind of tied into the Seahawks because I know, you know, we do have plenty of time to get into that game, but I think it is funny that when I was listening, talking about the smash mouth football that the Patriots can do, it just seems like we do it against the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
If I go back and analyze both games, that we really put the whooping on the Colts with running the ball. I mean, it was wide open. So, I mean, it was surprising to me that they just, you know, they couldn't do a thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
But stand there, get blocked, get whooped, miss tackles, and go. The thing about the Ravens, game, I can somewhat remember that. I think they talked about it before, when if you're playing the Patriots and you stop their running game, it seems like the Patriots in that game, just, of course, because they just quit running. And it, like, kind of took a lot of out of the their attack. I don't know if it's about Blunt himself or just the running back. So I guess it's in general, too. But if you can smack the Patriots in the mouth early with the run, I feel like we're going to stop running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
If we have success with it, we'll keep going now. With the Seahawks being like that, I'm pretty sure they're going to hit you hard in the mouth. I mean, I know that for a fact. I hope that, I don't know if I'm saying that we abandon the run. I feel like there were opportunities, times in that Ravens game that we could have, you know, snuck a draw in there. And that was a little Woodhead draw, but, you know, just, I don't know if offensive line's getting whooped so bad, then I know it's really hard to run the bar anyway. It doesn't matter who you back here.
Well, they had a good game this last week, so and right. I'm sure they're going to have plenty of confidence behind them, you know, whether you know a guy like Brian Stork is available to play or not. They're going to feel like, well, we had such a good game against Indianapolis, that should give them plenty of confidence.
Mm-hmm. I just hope they'll be able to control that, because I feel like even a second and six, or I mean a second and five, is going to be a lot better than second and nine against a team like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, letting them go with the pass rush. And who, I don't even know, I bet one of those defenses like that, their front seven is so good, or so they claim, that I don't really know who's up there. Who's in their front seven that's just alarming, or are all of them kind of the same? I really don't know, to be honest.
Well,
the Seahawks front seven.
You know, I'm going to take a closer look at that and try to make that decision myself. I kind of agree with you that at least my initial impression is that they're all pretty good players. But I'm not sure
they
who.
No head guy, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they do. So, you know, I'll probably take a couple of days to try to look at that and try to be somewhat discerning about it.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'll get ready to go on the phone here, but that's going to be a key. I'm with you as far as bringing down the safety. If the Seahawks beat you, well, I'm not going to say fine, but if the Seahawks were to win, cough, cough, whatever, please let them make them throw the ball. I don't want them to sit around.
Right.
And I don't want you to sit around there and make them the one. They're a big play team. This the one that they beat you on the Hail Mary. They beat you on their. They beat the Green Bay with the long seam or whatever it is. How many times have I seen Russell Wilson scramble for 40, 45 yards?
Yeah.
You're giving away plays. If you limit the offense, I want to see you. They probably can't 5, 6, 7 yards. You're throwing the ball. They're going to do that running. They're not going to hit you with stuff like that. I haven't seen them hit you just with passes. Make him beat you on the ball. Don't let him manage the game, throw 18 passes this whole game. Marshawn Lynch leads with 150 yards. Just make them come, bring somebody up in the box and make them throw the ball. I think you can show that and play disciplined football. This is a team to where you're going to have to be. This isn't the passing and stuff like that, what you're used to. You have to be in your position.
Right.
Belichick's going to have to write it up. And because, you know, they're going to try to, they're more going to catch you more off guard and just beat you straight up like the other teams we face. So,
sure.
Going to be a lot of discipline. Keep what you do, and then I feel like you got a good shot of beating this team.
I'm right there with you, Melvin. I think that's mm-hmm. That's pretty good. I think we should just, you know, drop the damn ball and kick it off right now because of what you just said. We're ready.
Right. I'm ready. I'll be ready. I'll be inflating balls, too.
Pump them up, baby.
All right, now see you later.
Thanks, Melvin. I love that guy. He's funny. Donald in Georgia, up next in the playbook. Hello, Donald.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, Donald.
Okay. Hey, I was watching the game, and I've got a couple of observations, I thought. Did you notice how much 250-pound running back Blunt looked like Barry Sanders doing those jump cuts?
Yeah, he had a couple in there that I thought for sure he was going to leave a foot or a knee or something on the field, right?
That was crazy. My wife and I, both fans, we looked at each other and said, that looked like Barry Sanders.
Yeah, he tried a couple of those Sanders-type moves. I'm surprised he didn't leave his jockstrap out on the field either, because those were pretty impressive. And I guess that, you know, that shows you what the Patriots really like about him, is that he can be somewhat nimble afoot and cause guys to miss.
Yes, sir. Hey, you know, one other thing I noticed, maybe I'm the only one, but it seemed to me that it was the Colts who were playing with deflated balls.
Yeah, in more ways than one, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a great day.
Thank you, Donald. I appreciate that. That's an analogy that has come to me a couple of times here. Do we find Noel in Denver? Hey, Noel.
Hey, family. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, you're a little bit better.
A little bit soft about that.
Oh, geez. There it goes again. Wow. All right.
Forget it.
Hang on. Yeah, hang on, Noel. Son of a gun. That's, you know, unfortunately, that's what happens with cell phones. So apologize for that, Noel. Try it again. If you can get to a landline, that would be great. But whatever area you're in, your cell phone just isn't letting you do it from the Rocky Mountains today, fella. Our buddy Nick Baby Love in Florida. Hello, Nick.
And you know I'm on my landline.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing today?
I'm hanging in there, brother. I just, you know, haven't had a chance to get with Kevin, but I wanted to send you the MP3. Did you hear your jingle that we did for you?
I have been unbelievably busy, so no, to answer your question, but yes, it's on my list of things to do.
Absolutely, so hopefully you get to that, you'll play it. I did another one, No Sleep to Phoenix, baby.
Way to go.
So while I'm calling it, you know, so, you know, I don't usually do this, but I just feel really good. I think we're focused, and I think we got a laissez-faire attitude of we got nothing to lose, so let's just go and punch them in the mouth.
Isn't that the way you really want it, though? I mean, that's the way you'd rather have it rather than being like a kingpin 10-point, two-touchdown favorite, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, John. I mean, I think the attitude going into 7 and 11, and I don't even want to mention them because the pain is too deep. I just don't see a scenario where Tom is going to allow, with as much as is at stake historically, allow us to lose. I don't know what you think.
Well, I just, you know, I think there's a lot on the line, as you said. I think there's a lot of legacy that's still on the line. I think Tom Brady's legacy is pretty good. I think Bill Belichick's legacy is pretty good. But if they actually win a fourth one together, then, you know, and Brady already making his sixth appearance, which is the most ever for a starting quarterback in the NFL, then I think you've just kind of, reinforced yourself and separated yourself from maybe one or two of the game's true greats at the position, one of those being Peyton Manning. So I think you've kind of taken that step ahead. You know, I don't know that these guys pay a lot of attention to the whole legacy thing until after everything is all said and done, because there's just so much they have to pay attention to in order to win the game in the first place. I also believe because they've come up short, as you suggested, in 7 and 11, that, you know, now that they're getting this chance, and now that they're not entirely sure how often or how many more times, if ever, they're going to get this chance again, they really want to maximize this. And I think that's where all of their attention will be, without a doubt.
Well, like I said, my attitude is I'm basically calling the game. You know, I mean, I want to impose my will. I hope Patriots Nation just has the attitude of, let's impose our will. It doesn't matter how we do it, whether it's Brandon Bolden on special teams or Gronk just being Gronk, you know what I mean? I mean, if I really gave my analysis and my opinion, John, I think the keys to the game, big players make big players in big game, putting aside number 12, I think Revis and Gronk, as I really analyze this, are going to have great games. And that's the bottom line. We didn't have a Revis before like we had Ty Law.
That's true.
And Gronk, you know, come on. If he was healthy in 7, he wasn't around in 7, I guess, but or was he? I'm not even sure.
Healthy. He wasn't healthy in 11.
Exactly.
Sprained ankle against the Giants the second time around.
And even though we're missing a couple players, I just think that's it. And I can't emphasize enough about my thing, No Sleep to Phoenix. We just got to impose our will as fans and really, really get behind the team. I mean, I just see no scenario where we're going to lose the game. I am not cocky, but I just say, you know, Tom deserves this. We deserve it. I mean, we paid our dues. I don't want to make a paradox, but look what the Spurs did last year after not winning it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully everybody, all the calls will be positive, and let's just, you know, we're going to win the game. Who knows? You know, like I said, turnovers, you know, you made a point earlier that I thought was really articulate. If we win the turnover battle, we're winning the game, hands down.
I think so. I believe that. I believe
Absolutely.
That. And I think the same goes true for Seattle. I think that's got to be a point of emphasis for both teams.
Yes, and all this noise that's being talked, you know, doesn't even matter. It's about going back to as I finish, and I thank you so much for putting me on. I just really, from the first second, want to punch them in the mouth because they're the bully, you know, and we deserve. Because at the end of the day, I want to ESPN still. It just infuriates me. But Peyton Manning's the greatest regular season quarterback. Who cares about the regular season?
Yep.
My God, why don't we play the game?
That's right. You play the game to get exactly where you are. That's
do we have to ever have a conversation? The greatest of all time is forever going to be Joe Montana. But give Tom Brady his due. Period.
Well, you know what? You can put, I think, Tom legitimately in that conversation if he wins here.
Well, I think Tom would even say, man, Montana was the greatest. But at least I don't want to hear, oh, Brady, Manny, whatever. There's not a conversation. I'll finish with this. Tom's 20-8. Peyton Manning's 11-13. Peyton Manning's 1-2 in Super Bowls. And Tom Brady, baby, is about to go 4-2 and win his fourth ring. Listen to Playbook all the time. Keep it locked with my man John Rook.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate that. Nick's getting fired up, isn't he? Totally getting fired up. All right, there you go. Phone lines open and available, 855-PATS-500. If you've been trying to get through, got a couple of openings now, 855-728-7500. That's the phone number. Webradio at patriots.com is the email, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Let's get a few of these in here. Margo sent this. Pagano apparently did notice, talking about the deflated footballs. So why lie? Because NBC Sports did a story on Pagano and deflated footballs, didn't notice it, won't comment on it. I think, you know, I can only answer in general terms, Margo, because I'm not sure, and I haven't really had a chance to really decipher the story on Pro Football Talk. I can only tell you that my guess would be that he realizes that the more he comments on it, the more he's going to dig, you know, a hole for the Colts to climb out of. So it probably is just one of those situations like, let's let this die and let it go. We got our butts beat and we need to move on. And I think that's probably about the best way that you can term it. I'm not sure that there's anything else. Jay wrote, seriously, deflating? This is my nitpick. Can we win a game and have the other team say, God, we sucked tonight and we were outplayed in every aspect of the game? Nope. Patriots must have cheated. Kind of the point that I wrote about, you know, in the View from Above column today. I just, you know, I think Patriot fans, you just kind of have to get used to this. I think you need to get used to being persecuted somewhat because you've got, you know, an organization that, as I said, likes to push the envelope, likes to scour for, you know, an edge. And they overturn every, you know, stinking pebble, every stone, every, you know, seashell in the ocean that they possibly can to find an edge in an effort to gain an advantage over their opposition. And I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. Sometimes that's construed as, you know, trying to be underhanded. No, I don't think it's underhanded at all. I think it's doing your homework. That's what I think. I think it's doing your homework. I think it's being prepared, as prepared as you can possibly be. I think it means outworking the opposition. Hell, if anything, they're elevating the game. Because now if the Patriots are going to go to that extent to outwork and get by the opposition, don't you think the opposition is going to take, you know, umbrage with that and say, well, shoot, if the Patriots are doing that, we got to do it. We have to. Why? Well, because the Patriots are champs. We want to be champs. We got to be willing to work as hard. We'll find out. Dale from Bedford says, it's too easy and quick to measure the air pressure in a football for this to be an issue. It could even be done every time they put a ball in play after a change of possession. Either that or scuttle the rule, which I think is Belichick's point. Ding, 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 ding. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Dale. On to Seattle. Should be a great game to analyze. The teams aren't all that much alike, and neither one seems really dominant or unbeatable, at least going in. Coaches' styles couldn't be more different. Mouths versus mongrels, dopers versus cheaters. Football without rules. Rules. Referees, don't bother to show up for the game. Spin the football. See who kicks off. This should be new fun league championship game. That's pretty good. Let's see. Wally from Fort Lauderdale says, so what you're saying is the ball sacks are being guarded before the game. Yes, that's exactly what they are. The officials do that. They guard the ball sacks. So there's no chance of any monkey business. That's exactly what they're saying. You know, those balls are inspected. The footballs are inspected 2 hours and 15 minutes before every game. And then they're put aside, and the bag is unzipped when the game kicks off, and that's where the game balls when a team goes on offense comes from. And each team has their own ball sack, so to speak. Rick in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm becoming Andy Hart. Here's a question comment I haven't heard that I'm confused about. I heard the Colts felt deflated balls during the first time we played them when they picked Brady off twice and then informed the league. Then Sunday night happens. So why haven't other teams accused the Patriots of this? Why do the Patriots only deflate the balls when playing the Colts? Ah, okay. This is an email of an earlier Facebook post that I read. Okay, same guy. And my answer would be the same as I said earlier. That's a great question. It's amazing that the Colts would be the ones to complain about it, and nobody else has. Okay, so why is that? Either A, teams are too stupid to notice it, or B, there's nothing to it. Which do you think it is? Peter says, listening to your discussion, and I had a thought, is it possible the NFL is holding off on any announcement because they did find something and they really don't want it to be the big focus heading into the Super Bowl? You know, I guess that's possible, Peter. I suppose it's possible, but I would also tell you that I don't know how in the world you could get, unless somebody, you know, owns up and is actually, admitted to doing something wrong and then shown them how they did it. And I don't know that you can do that in this short amount of time. I mean, literally, we're less than 2 days from when the game was taking place. I don't know that if the NFL is trying to do its due diligence, and I think they're probably a little bit, you know, singed by not doing their due diligence on, like, some other things that have happened earlier this year off the field. Right, Ray Rice? I think they're probably a little disturbed by that. So I think they're probably going to try to do their due diligence. In fact, they probably will err more on the side of caution in this particular instance. And they'll really try to dig as much as they can. Now, I do think it's in their best interest to try to clear this up so it doesn't detract from the actual game itself. And they probably also, and this is where I think you might have something, Peter, if they are able to determine that there was some monkey business going on, they needed to figure out what the adjudication should be. How should the Patriots be penalized? Who should be penalized? That's what they need to figure out, and they need to have it all, you know, at once so they can make the announcement and move on and then concentrate on the game itself, not do something stupid like Michael Wilbon suggested and, oh, let's let the Colts play because the Patriots cheated. I mean, I came off my couch when I saw that on PTI last night. I came off my couch, and I wanted to throw something at the TV, realizing, of course, that I'm not sitting there in the studio and ready to call Mike, call him out on that. I understand it's a sports, you know, debate, and it's, you know, an opinion, and he's probably just kind of like spouting off the top of his head. I happen to know, having known, you know, some of the guys that produced that show from my time working at ESPN, happen to know that, you know, they discuss these topics well before they actually get on the air and talk about them. And a lot of the stuff that they say, well, this is what I want to say about this, and this is what I want to say about that, and that's why they have the clock and everything, because everything's scripted out. Some of this is scripted. I don't know if that particular comment was scripted or not, but I would tell you that I think that was one of the more inane things that gentleman has ever said in his life. And I think he's a very good journalist. And I think he's a really solid opinion maker, if you will. You know, a trend setter, if you will, an opinion setter in the sports world. He's a wonderful voice. He's a great columnist. And I like his work on television. That was a really dumb thing he said. Kind of how I look at it. Let's see what else we have here. Gabe in Newtown, Pennsylvania. All right, John, let's get this out of the way off the bat. So on Brady's pick, the receiver turned the ball over to Pagano, who then gave it to the refs and said it was deflated. It was fine until they gave it to the ref. Sounds fishy and just plain stupid. Really, really stupid. With like 47 cameras and now the officials constantly cycle balls in and out of the game, I really don't see how this holds weight. The NFL is so sedulous. Ha! He always works Eric's word in, with the footballs before and during gameplay, that this story really doesn't hold any weight except for the fact that they want to continue to tarnish our legacy. Yeah, you know, that's the other issue. Unless there was some real monkey business on the sideline, with the way that the TV cameras and the fans are in the stands and can see everything that's going on these sidelines, how could someone do this? How could someone deflate or reinflate or under? I don't understand how they could do that without somebody or some camera or something somewhere saying something. I don't get it. That would have to be some sleight of hand is all I can tell you. I just don't understand it. And I think that's a good point, Gabe. He says, really, how long can they investigate a story like this? What about Rodgers liking overinflated balls or the Vikings heating their balls? Any fines there? Any lost draft picks there? Now Super Bowl week is going to be all about how the Pats are going to cheat to give Brady ring number 4. Makes me sick. Maybe check the Pats gloves and balls for magnets to see why our receivers catch them so much. I know. How about this? Brady's going to motion out a receiver and have Vereen quarterback and throw a backwards pass to Vollmer, who reported as ineligible, who then has an end around to Edelman, who then throws to Brady, streaking down the field for a would-be touchdown, but then he laterals to Gronk 10 yards after the catch, who then bowls into the end zone for a game winner. That's cheating. Really? Well, I'd love to see that one. I think we all would, Gabe, and that's a great, great end to it right there. That's awesome. Good stuff. Rick says the Seahawks have won 8 straight if you count the playoffs. Before last Sunday, where the Seahawks obviously got very fortunate, quarterbacks Seattle beat were John Skelton, Sean Hill, Mark Sanchez, Colin Kaepernick twice, Ryan Lindley, and Cam Newton. Not exactly a Pro Bowl lineup. They go up against a legit QB in Rodgers and go life and death to win. Could it be that their 8-game winning streak can be slightly tainted? Well, you can only play the guys that are on your schedule. That's how I always kind of look at those things, Rick. You're making a good point. I don't know that it's tainted. You got to beat those guys. Some of them they did, some of them they didn't. And, yeah, they went life and death with a wounded Aaron Rodgers. Look, there's no question that, you know, I do think Seattle deservedly is a favorite. It wouldn't surprise me to see this a pick'em game, you know, right when we get to kickoff. Largely because I think Seattle does have, you know, some deficiency on offense. And I think the Patriots match up well with them in the secondary. I think they match up very well with them. It really depends to me on whether or not Seattle can run the ball, whether it's Lynch or whether it's, you know, Wilson. I think it depends on whether or not the Patriots can slow them and make them one-dimensional. Because I do not believe Russell Wilson can beat the Patriots with his arm. I don't think so. And I think that's the matchup the Patriots want. And I think that's what they'll be working on pretty solid for the next 2 weeks. Santosh says, started by Ryan Grigson, the GM of the Colts, to steer the conversation away from how bad the Colts roster was made up and of the way they got crushed by the Pats. Now the media talks more about this than calling for his GM job. Maybe from a Colts perspective. Yeah, it's possible. Marvin says, John, great game played by our guys Sunday night. Now it's on to Seattle. My nitpick is one that you talk about a lot, situational football. My nitpick was the squib kick just before the end of the first half. I don't understand why we didn't have Gostkowski just do his usual and kick it into the end zone and make them bring it out from there. We got bailed out by the gutless Chuck Pagano by not trying to make a play down the field with a pass or get a PI call to get a shot for a last-second field goal try. This was Pagano's biggest game of his career, and he has luck take a knee with 6 seconds left on the clock. I knew then the game was ours. One thing for sure, John, Pete Carroll will not make the same mistake. Says, great show as always. Let's get this one done. TB12, one more ring. Go Pats. This is Marvin in Kernersville, North Carolina. You know, Marvin, I can only tell you that I think that the only reason for them to squib a kick is because there's some doubt due to the field conditions or the outside conditions that he can kick the ball through the back of the end zone. I don't think we'll have that problem in Arizona, and I'd be stunned if we saw that kind of a situational play, because if you don't want the guy to return the kick, then what's the best thing? Kick it through the back of the end zone, and they take the ball on the 20. So, you know, unless they feel like they can limit someone to inside the 20 and play that field position game, you know, I think you'll see him, you know, kicking the ball off, you know, through the back of the end zone as best as he possibly can, because, you know, that way you know nobody's going to touch the ball and there won't be any chance for anybody to get a big return on you. Here's Noel, and he says, sorry for the poor quality line, just sent the email. I just feel that deflation of football is right there with Don Shula, John Harbaugh, and the rest of the crybabies. Just feel bad for those fans who take this to heart and feel it might tarnish the Pats' reputation. You know, yeah, it is. I know that a lot of fans take it to heart. I think you have to realize, Noel, and I really believe that this is the way that a lot of Patriots fans should take it, especially those that, you know, might not be have listened and follow as closely as maybe people like you do each and every week here, that, you know, this goes deeper than just the issue at the surface. And this is all about grasping at straws and people trying to, you know, insinuate that the Patriots are doing something that they shouldn't be doing in an effort to win a football game. It had nothing to do with winning or losing this last football game, and I think even, you know, less intelligent people than you or I, you know, can understand that, because it was 45-7. You know, and I think you're probably seeing a little bit more quiet come from the Colts, because they realize this sounds nothing like they want to represent themselves. This looks completely sour grapes. It looks completely like being poor sports. They're just keeping their mouths shut because they have nothing else to say. And, you know, and I think the Seahawks and the Seahawks fans are too smart for this. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, who gets asked what about it next week when the interviews start taking place in Arizona. Noel says, if Tom doesn't try to force it into Gronk, we'll be okay. My only nitpick, the last two games, well, my tires deflate when it's cold out and the idiot light comes on, just like the idiot's trying to knock the Pats. Good point, Noel. It happens in my car, too. Gets cold, your tires deflate. That's how they keep from freezing, and that's what happens when you have pressurized air. Things deflate. Now, it was only 45 degrees and rainy, generally speaking, when the balls were flying, you know, here at the stadium a couple of days ago, but anything's possible. Anything's possible. He says, stop Lynch and Wilson from running and we'll beat these Hawks. Their receivers aren't that good. The pack just collapsed. Worst situational football I've seen in more than 60 years. We will not collapse. Thank you, Noel. Good call by you on that one. Good email by you on that one. Let's see what we have on Facebook today. Let's see. Kareem says, don't mind my ignorance, John, but I have a question. So the ball was deflated, assuming to benefit the quarterback and the receiver and to make more catches and have a better grip or whatnot, so that wouldn't work for both sides of the ball, meaning wouldn't the Colts also benefit from the ball being deflated? Well, each team has its own set of balls, Kareem, before the game, checked by the officials. So the same football that Tom Brady would be throwing isn't necessarily the same football that Andrew Luck would be throwing. In fact, they're completely different. And maybe the Colts like their balls a little bit firmer, and maybe the Colts like theirs, the Patriots like theirs a little less so. I don't know. I'm just surmising here. It's different. Each team puts their own ball in play. Each team puts their own ball in play. Let's see what else. Is there anything else here? After a great win, let alone AFC Championship win, almost nobody said, hey, congratulations. This is great. Instead, we're talking about this stupid minuscule rule, which hopefully is not it. Thank you. Okay. You're right. We have tried to spend some time talking about the game itself, and it was a brilliant performance overall, I think, by the Patriots. We did knock the game plan against the Ravens a bit last week here in the playbook, and deservedly so, and we knocked then, and we're complimenting now. Equal opportunity here, because I thought that they did everything that they needed to do in order to control the line of scrimmage. And even when the game got to be 14-7, and it's hard to nitpick a 45-7 beatdown, you know, for a championship when you're in a trophy game, you're in a hat and T-shirt game. Hard to nitpick that. But my one nitpick was the penalties they gave up on that one second quarter drive that went 93 yards. Where the Colts scored and pulled within 14-7. They had two third downs where they got off the field except for A, a hold by Brandon Browner, and B, a roughing penalty on all people, Vince Wilfork. Now, those two plays kept drives alive by the Colts. They ended up punching it in and made it 14-7. And then I'm looking at Twitter and it's blowing up like, oh, game on. Here come the Colts. Blah, blah, blah. And you know what? They were all right. They're all right. Game was on. And then the Patriots had a chance to put seven in the end zone over the end zone and kind of stalled in the red zone. And that was actually a nitpick that I never really got to today. But the red zone still wasn't perfect. They were forced to kick a field goal, as you'll recall, and they went into the locker room leading 17-7. Now, the game turned, of course, in the third quarter, scoring three times. They just came out and put pedal to metal and didn't worry about the score of the scoreboard, and they jammed it right down the Colts' throats. And I thought, you know, if there were any adjustments made at halftime, that they were brilliant. I don't think it was any more of an adjustment other than let's make sure we're sticking to, you know, message here and staying on the game plan, and we're running this ball, and that's going to set everything up. And it did beautifully. And the Patriots then forced, you know, the Colts into a little bit more sense of urgency, and then they got turnovers. And then they got field position. And it just snowballed. And it was 38-7 before you knew it. Game was over as you're going into the fourth quarter. So, you know, it was a superb game plan, in my opinion. It was what needed to be done. It happened. It happened quickly, and it was extremely impressive overall. Can't argue with the way that they decided to do things, either from a throwing or running standpoint. It was well done. Let's see. Jonathan says, I would have to think after this whole deflate game, BB will not hold back once we meet the Colts next year. We've blown them out by 30 to 40 points in the last three meetings. I'm sure there will be no holding back or any sympathy next year when we lay down a 60 burger on the sore losers. Until then, on to Seattle for ring four. TB12 will be the best in history. Peyton who? Next year is next year. Robert says, something to look into. BB and TB12 are 12-0 against teams they meet in the playoffs for the first time that season. You know what? I don't think I was aware of that. So that's a good number, Robert. 12-0 against teams they meet in the playoffs for the first time this season. Well, they didn't play them in the regular season, so Seattle would qualify for this. Let's see if the Super Bowl holds true. Wow. Brittany says, John, I love Tom, but his throws didn't seem accurate enough, possibly because of the rain or underinflated footballs. Ha ha. He's going to have to be near perfect against the Seahawks. Our defense was awesome. It really made a statement. Looking for them to do that again. Okay. Evan also says, John, I think many people are overlooking the injuries to Sherman and Thomas. I'm sure both will play in the Super Bowl, but I think the offense will target Sherman because of his injury. That injury could possibly hinder his ability to press at the line, which is his bread and butter. Thomas's shoulder could also be a problem for him. He's a safety. He kind of needs that to hit people. I see either a linebacker or Chancellor, maybe, or two or three guys in his zone covering Gronk. Just as long as the Patriots are able to move the ball into the red zone, I think they got this game, stop the run, make Russell Wilson win from the pocket, and I think we get the Super Bowl ring. Okay. Pretty good analogy there. Pretty good analogy there. All right, what else we got? Anything else today? I think there were a couple of tweets. Peter says, hey, I think Russell's struggle is a field that the Pats have to use. Lacey was beating them to So Blunt and LaFell, so have a great day. Okay, I think I understand what you're saying here on Twitter. Lacey was beating them, so Blunt and LaFell, go do the same thing. And let's see. Do we have anybody else here? I got to go scroll through all these. Oh, here we go. Lynn says this on Twitter. Why can't people just accept we won fair and square to this Super Bowl? Can't say what I want. Well, sure you can, Lynn. You can say whatever you want. It's Twitter. You know, I might not repeat it, but sure, you can say whatever you want. Lauren says about the article, the View from Above column that I had on the website earlier today. She said, it perfectly sums up everything I wanted to say about all this. Bleep. Thank you, Lauren. Jose says, it was a great game. The Patriots showed they can do great on offense and defense. On to the Seahawks. Going to be a great game. Probably the understatement of the day, but we're going to read it anyway. All right. Sorry for the pause here. I'm just kind of scrolling through some of the tweets that came through. Looking at a lot of different, you know, a lot of retweets. Yeah. Okay, good stuff. All right, Kev, I guess that's going to wrap it up for today. What are we talking about tomorrow? Because I haven't even looked at tomorrow on the schedule. Any ideas yet?
We got WTF Wednesday.
That's right.
So we'll have to come up with something.
What's our focus? Are we attempting a game show this week?
We could potentially do that.
We could possibly on Thursday, I guess, huh?
Yeah, we could think about it.
All right, we may have to think about that. I don't know. Maybe we should just take a poll. Let's see.
Take a poll tomorrow.
Well, but we could even start by doing it on Twitter. So, you know, if you want to see a game show.
Tweet at JR Broadcaster.
Yeah, there you go. At JR Broadcaster, vote. You want to see a game show Thursday or a not game show on Thursday. And if you want just, you know, regular phones open and we talk about something else, you know, Russell Baxter will be here, all that kind of stuff, then just give me a yay or a nay on a game show Thursday this week. At JR Broadcaster is the Twitter handle. So let it fly. As Kevin said, it'll be hashtag WTF. What's the focus Wednesday tomorrow? I know what the focus is. It's the Super Bowl, for goodness sakes.
I mean, that's what I'm kind of focused on.
Yeah.
I don't need any game shows.
Yeah, well, it's fun.
That's just my vote.
Okay. All right.
Bye week, sir. Yeah. But
it is a bye week.
This is it.
You want to talk about the Pro Bowl?
No. I want to talk about the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Well, then this game is the game everyone wanted to see. This game doesn't need... I don't think... There's nothing else on my mind other than this game. This is the game I've dreamt about for 17 weeks.
All right. So there you go. So let me know what you think at JR Broadcaster. Vote! WTF Wednesday coming up tomorrow right here in the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2